Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Last week, the first ever Interfaith Day was held in the Capitol Rotunda and Pier on the second legislative day of 2018. Members from the state's Jewish, Muslim, Buddhist, Baha'i, Roman Catholic, Lutheran, and Episcopal faiths all gathered. Today, we welcome three South Dakota leaders who participated in the gathering. Bishop David Zellmer leads ELCA South Dakota Synod. He's here with me in the SDPB studios at the University of Sioux Falls. Bishop Zellmer, welcome back to the program.
Great to be here.
Taniza Islam is an immigration attorney and executive director for South Dakota Voices for Peace. She's here with me in Sioux Falls as well. Taniza, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And Stan Adelstein is a former South Dakota state lawmaker, and he joins us from the SDPB studios at the Black Hills Bureau in Rapid City. Senator Adelstein, thanks for being here as well.
Good. It's wonderful to be here.
All right, Bishop Zellmer, let's start with you, because before there was an Interfaith Day, there was a Lutheran Day. Take us back in history a little bit.
Well, I arrived in South Dakota as a pastor in 1981. I remember getting the invitation from Bishop Bytrum to come to the Lutheran Day out at the legislature. Almost all the legislators at that time were Lutheran. Huge event in the basement of the church, and great dinner, great opportunity for a young pastor to watch the political process take place. And through the years, that's continued on, and it's been moved and reshaped a couple of times through the decades, but it has a deep history.
Huh. So why Interfaith Day?
Well, I thought after last year that there would be a moment that maybe we would invite our brothers and sisters from different faith traditions to come to the Capitol and remind people that we are a people of law, that we have the First Amendment, that it is not freedom from religion, it's freedom for religion.
Senator Adelstein, do you remember those days of Lutheran Day in Pierre?
I very much do. As a matter of fact, they made a very special gift to me very briefly. Every legislator who was at this dinner was given a little box with a gift, and in it was, when they opened it, a beautiful Black Hills gold cross. I turned to my Linda and I said, "What am I going to do?" And she said, "Just say thank you and sit down." But when I opened my box, there was a Star of David, a mug and David, a beautiful star that I have worn on my lapel every day since. In fact, I'm wearing it right now. It was a symbol that has carried me a long way because of this ELCA and the Lutheran tradition in South Dakota, but that's very special to me.
Hmm. Taniza, when you first heard about Interfaith Day, what were your initial thoughts?
I was so excited. I mean, I think the beauty that came out of the vitriol of last year was the beautiful showing of a diverse coalition coming together. Not only faith leaders and people of faith, people who don't prescribe to a faith, social justice-minded folks, and everyday neighbors. And I have a special place in my heart for Lutherans. I went to Lutheran middle school and high school, Missouri Synod. I've always worked in interfaith settings, and it was a beautiful showing of how diverse South Dakota really is. I think it's something we often forget, but there's Hindus, Baha'is, Buddhists, Muslims, Native American spirituality that has been here the longest, and it was really exciting for us to all come together to show our solidarity.
When I look at the press release for South Dakota Interfaith Day, Bishop Zellmer, there are, you know, thoughts about rise in activities that degrade other religions and denies religious freedoms, especially Muslims and Jews, increase in hate speech, crimes, and bullying directed against particularly Muslims and Jews. Talk to me about some of what we've been seeing in the state of South Dakota, and, you know, why it's noteworthy.
When we've had terrorist attacks around the world, I'm aware that we've had calls for well, calling out the National Guard at one point to line the borders of South Dakota with our National Guard troops, which would not be really effective. But when people get afraid, they want to blame someone. They want to be. They want that fear to have some focus. My concern is anytime you start to identify a specific group as being responsible, and that they're really just the only source of terroristic activity. One, we've certainly missed the point. We've had all kinds of folks who have participated in acts that are criminal, unconscionable. They come from very different traditions, and to just focus on one, I think, does not help the public discourse.
Tanisa, as an immigration attorney, as someone who is living as a Muslim in South Dakota, as someone who works for South Dakota Voices for Peace, are you seeing an increase in people who are talking to you about hate speech or bullying?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is, as we've started looking at the trends during legislative session last year, where there were two anti-refugee Islamophobic resolutions and one anti-refugee bill, we started to pay attention. And that's really what the mission of South Dakota Voices for Peace and Justice is to expose what is happening for what it is. I mean, anti-Sharia legislation was passed here in South Dakota in 2012. And I've asked faith leaders, I've asked Muslim communities, I've asked social justice communities, what happened? How did that pass so quickly without any debate? I wasn't here yet. And I'm not saying that I'm the responsible for bringing these things to light, but I think this moment is a moment in our history where people are starting to pay attention to the rhetoric. And we've seen, since legislative session in 2017, there have been over 24 identified Islamophobic and anti-refugee speakers coming into South Dakota. I believe that South Dakotans are good, hardworking people, and you learn to hate. And there is a circuit that is bringing in speakers to teach people how to hate and why to hate. And I do use hate because these are really hateful things that are being said about our neighbors, people in our communities. Muslims have been here since the 1900s, and the census shows us that. We are part of the fabric here. We're not new. And so, yeah, there has been a huge uptick in this last year of this rhetoric and propaganda. And my biggest concern is that it's very top down. It's from our elected officials. It is platforms that elected officials running for office are using. And this has severe impacts on everyday people. Muslims are scared in South Dakota. They don't know who to trust. And I love bringing them the message that this interfaith coalition has come together and to trust our neighbors, because at the end of the day, we understand that we are all different. We have all our different practices, different cultural practices, religious practice, but we're all American. And we all strive for the same things, the American dream, if you will, or good education, access to healthcare, financial stability. Those are all things we all care about. So, yeah, and unfortunately, we have been, now that South Dakota Voices is kind of on the map in South Dakota, we have started receiving information about harassment and bullying that our kids are seeing in school. And as a mom of two young boys, that's really where my heart is and my passion is, to protect our kids from this propaganda and rhetoric.
Senator Adelstein, your thoughts on an uptick in bullying, hate speech? Give us some perspective from your point of view, please.
I've been so troubled by the speakers that have come into Rapid City, the film that was shown. They've been in Aberdeen. There's a whole program to teach hate, and it's based on falsehood. It's based on hate for a religion, paying no attention to the extremists that have been, frankly, in Judaism. Have there been extremists in Christianity? That's the KKK, consider themselves the ultimate Christians. And I'm very bothered that this idea is circulating. Coincidentally, I'm sitting here at the desk in Rapid City, across the seat from a young woman who works for public broadcasting, that is the granddaughter of Tom Hennies, our former chief of police, a grand legislator who was always very sensitive to dislike, hatred, and lies about other people. Of all things, that's happened to me this morning.
Bishop Zelmer, tell me what you feel your role is toward, you know, having conversations about faith in amongst the Lutherans in South Dakota. Where, you know, what's your responsibility? What's your obligation? What's your opportunity?
With the ELCA, we're one of the more larger denominations in South Dakota. We have churches in all four corners. I think part of our responsibility is, one, to be aware that we have people that are afraid in our communities of faith. How do we speak to them? How do we carry a message where we're not promoting another faith, but we are certainly promoting the idea that they have the right under the Constitution to practice their faith, and that they are our sisters and brothers down the street, that they are our neighbors, and they have been our neighbors. I would hope that we would be reminded of the best idea ever from the one that we follow, is that we are to love our neighbors as Jesus has loved us. To me, I appreciate the commandment and try to live that out the best that I can every day. And I would hope that each one of our Lutheran brothers and sisters in South Dakota would live that out as well.
Where do
Bishop
you, Tanisa?
Does.
Go ahead, Senator Alstein. Is that something you've seen put into practice?
Bishop Zelmer is really a demonstration of what the Jewish Jesus had asked, as so many rabbis have done through the years. He practices rather than just talks about it.
Tanisa, where do people go to get, you talked about factual, all of you have spoken of factual inaccuracies, you know, things that are not true, being, you know, taught in various locations. Where do you go to find accurate information about faith in general?
Yeah, that's the trickiest part, right? Now we're starting to see reports where Google Analytics have actually been part of the reason why Islamophobia and anti-refugee bigotry is taking over the internet. And so there are efforts to look at those things. And there's so much misinformation out there. It's hard to know what's factual. At South Dakota Voices for Peace, we are making South Dakota-specific fact sheets and dispelling myths that are commonly made. We are doing presentations in communities to inform people of what Islamophobia is, because it's a thing. It's a $57 million industry that has been wheeling its wheels since 2005.
So when is something Islamophobic, and when is something just I don't understand, or I don't agree with that, or that's
great
not
question.
Something I could ever believe?
I think when you question it and say, I'm not sure if I can believe that, that means you have this genuine interest in understanding it. But when you believe something that's told to you that is hateful, I mean, we know what hate is. I mean, when someone says all the Muslims who showed up in Pier last year are terrorists, I think it's pretty clear that that's an over-propagandized generalization of the Muslim population and who showed up to Pier. So when you question that, that's when it becomes a question. But if you believe that without questioning, that's when it becomes Islamophobia.
Senator Adelstein, what about anti-Semitism? What does that look like? Something very similar.
There are certainly newspapers that are being circulated. There's this program called The Stormer. The anti-Semitism is so clearly false and so unbelievable that doesn't concern me as much as this these lies about the faith of Islam, and although it, learning to hate one person makes you an easy hater for others. And it's my job to try and help. You know, earlier there was a comment, she made a very wonderful comment about from the top down. I will be sending letters to the candidates of both party as a former politician, I'm a politician because I'm a free person in this state country. Everyone is a politician. To elected officials and candidates for office, asking them to join us, those who believe in sharing the voices for peace. And eventually, of course, obviously, I'll go public with those that respond positively and with those that don't, because the nature of South Dakota's values are tied to this, not just acceptance, but this support. There are so few Jews in South Dakota that I'm sensitive to the acceptance and the support of others.
Hmm. Bishop Zelmer, what does hatred against or persecution against Christians look like? And do we see it in America, in South Dakota, or is it something that you see across the globe?
Well, when our folks gather, they don't do so in fear and trembling. I've been to parts of the world where that's not true. I've worshipped in the Middle East. I've been in West Africa, where people do gather in concern of their life as they come to worship. I've been in a mosque in Cameroon where they had been attacked by animus. I've been in a Lutheran church where they were also attacked by tribal folks from across the border. I have some appreciation for how fearful it can be when you come together as a community to worship. I don't experience that in South Dakota. We are the predominant part of this culture, which I think for me means that we have a responsibility to pass that same privilege and right on to our brothers and sisters that perhaps worship on a different day. And so,
for those you mentioned earlier speaking to fear, you know, people who have fear, for those who feel that by giving that right to other people that you will lose the right someday yourself, because that's what they're afraid of.
Yeah.
In some ways, that if, you know, that's what you hear them saying. If there's too many, if we're not the dominant culture from their perspective, then we will be in the place that these other people are now. We don't want to switch that. So how do you address that level of, you know, how do you create empathy in that moment and address that level of fear?
Well, hate doesn't drive out fear, that's for sure. Again, I'll go back to our relationship with our sisters and brothers in Cameroon. They have 280 different cultures in that country. They've got more religions than you and I could count up in a day. And they pride themselves on finding a place for each one to be able to worship. They've learned how to live together, where there really isn't much of a predominance one over the other. I mean, I've worshiped in a church that the land came from the Muslim leader, sold it, actually donated it, to the Lutheran community, helped to build the church that was there. We have examples, I think, from around the world and even within our state where people can, in fact, get along. And I'm just astonished at people that want to promote hatred to raise the level of fear when it's so uncalled for and out of context.
Go ahead, Tanisa.
I just wanted to say I heard a beautiful analogy this morning, actually, on NPR. And the analogy was there's somehow this vision that we're living in like a state of a pie. And we all have our own slice, and that some of us are coming to take your slice away. But really to look at it as not as a pie, but that if we all come together, we can have more pies. I mean, it's a coming together that increases the wealth not just economically, which is oftentimes a focus for the need for having more people come into the state of South Dakota, but also culturally, and how rich we become, how much more worldly we become when the world comes together. I mean, we're isolated in South Dakota. I think everyone can agree on that, which is an anomaly. I mean, the world is diversifying. The United States is diversifying. And to think that we need to hold on to each one of our own slices of the pie is not going to, that's not happening. It's not reality. Right? Like, we need to learn that if we extend the hand rather than close, that we'll be bringing more and building more together, not from each other.
We need to take a quick break. Senator Adelstein, will you stay with us till after the break there and in Rapid City, please?
Certainly. I sure will. I'd like to.
All right. We'll stay put here, too. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're talking about interfaith dialogue in South Dakota after South Dakota's first Interfaith Day in Pierre during the legislative session. With me today, we have former South Dakota state lawmaker Stan Adelstein. He's joining us from the Black Hills Bureau. And then at the University of Sioux Falls, SDPB Studios, we have Tanisa Islam. She's executive director for South Dakota Voices for Peace and an immigration attorney. And we have Bishop David Zellmer, who leads the ELCA South Dakota Synod. And Tanisa, I want to start with you and go back to something you said in the beginning of our conversation about some legislation in 2012 that was what you called anti-Sharia law. And I'm guessing this comes from the fear of Sharia law being, explain what that exactly is, sure. And then we'll talk about whether or not that could take over a community where enough people who believe in certain things move to town.
Sure. So in 2008, an organization called Act for America took this on as their lobbying platform, and they cookie-cuttered bills that went across rural areas in the United States called anti-Sharia legislation. And they take credit, actually, for it passing here in South Dakota in 2012. Act for America has been identified as a hate group by Southern Poverty Law Center. So I think that's really important for the everyday South Dakotan to understand. Something that we call it is Sharia hysteria. There's Sharia law are the principles of our religion. Everything from how to treat orphans and those who are homeless, how to feed the hungry, how to worship five times a day, to how to give tithings. But what the Sharia hysterics would have you believe is that it's only about the penal code found within Islamic jurisprudence, which is stereotypically thought of as cutting off the hands if you steal something, stoning to death, or forcing women to cover their hair. These very archaic, medieval kind of beliefs and practices that the Sharia hysterics and Islamophobes want you to believe. Well, it works in rural areas because there's not enough Muslims to show our neighbors that that's not how we practice our religion. I mean, every religion has terroristic tendencies or has, I'm sorry, that's not what I meant. Every religion has violence within the text and also played out by its followers, okay? But the overwhelming majority of all of us of faith choose the love and mercy in our religion. And so when people are scared about Muslims or Sharia law taking over the United States, it's just not even possible if you understand how democracy works and if you understand how you amend the Constitution. I mean, Muslims in the United States comprise of about 1-2%. That's it, of the population. And in South Dakota, it's 0.003% of the population. So that's what I mean by that is the propagation of Islamophobia, is that it's just not even possible. It's not a thing. It can't happen. But this is what really gets people scared, because they don't know otherwise, and they don't know where to go for the information to counter that. And we hope to be able to bring that information to South Dakota.
Senator Adelstein, go ahead.
It is so ridiculous because the laws of the United States are passed by legislators from all faiths, and in order to get a majority vote to make it a law, you have to pass it, and it has to be, you know, this idea of a fear of a law that it, or of rules within a certain law are impossible. In fact, about the only way that religion affects laws are negatives against some issues, frankly. I sought to get equal treatment for homosexuals, for gays and lesbians. And it was always opposed on the basis of the Bible that I share, making it impossible. It's so stupid because the laws are the laws.
And I think that brings up a really great point from whoever's listening right now who is a non-believer, who is an atheist, who is sitting back and saying, see, this is why, Bishop Zellmer, this is why I don't believe, because I have all these examples of faith being used to persecute and faith being used to judge and faith being used to exclude. So what's your message to the non-believers to sort of, I don't want to say justify, but to sort of contextualize, you know, the role of faith and what they're seeing it played out in the world?
Well, one, they have every right to not believe, again, under the Constitution. And they can run for office. There's not a test that we apply to those that want to run. You know, you have to be a certain denomination, certain faith, or a person that doesn't have faith and is proud of it. I mean, that they have equal protection under the law. And there are times I'm quite frankly embarrassed about being a Christian. When Timothy McVeigh blew up the federal building, it was not a fine day for Christian people. He did that as a Christian person. My parents-in-law were supposed to be in that building at the Social Security office when the bomb went off. And the people that were sitting in that chair that they were supposed to be sitting in died. It was not a fine moment for me as a Christian man. Things are done in the name of faith that are abominations. And that has always been true. And so when hate speech starts to rise, I'm always concerned, no matter where it comes from.
What's our role, Senator Adelstein? What's our role going forward? What happens next? Interfaith Day is is one step among many.
We need to establish a clear place to demonstrate those that are suggesting the hatred. These very speakers that are traveling are telling an untruth. And that we are going to be developing here as well as other places. Your earlier question about what happens if you remain silent and let this happen. A pastor in Germany, Niemöller, said a very interesting thing, a very interesting quote from him. First they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me.
Bishop Zellmer, what's next?
I think we continue to be vigilant. I think we continue to pay attention to the public discourse. We are going to be entering a pretty active election cycle. I think it's important that we have conversation with those that would like to hold office in South Dakota. What values are they going to espouse? What are they going to lift up as they serve the people? I think we continue to promote what is best about each one of our faiths in ways that are positive, and that we continue to have opportunity to be mindful of one another as we live in this beautiful state.
I read in a book the other day, never compare the best part of your faith with the worst part of someone else's. Yeah. That sort of stuck with me. Denise Islam, we'll give you the last word. What's next in South Dakota?
What's next is action. I think a lot of us have been complacent for a long time, just thinking we're neighbors and, you know, everything's, the lawn is green and so things are good. But this is a moment in history that we're seeing where social justice issues are really what's driving people to act. And I ask my neighbors to get to know one another on a deeper level, but to speak out, you know, wherever hate rears its ugly head, which is most often within our own families at our dinner table. And I've had to deal with it too. You know, people of color have their own biases and own prejudices. All of us have a responsibility to correct inaccurate information. And I hope that people feel empowered to do that by seeking out resources to help them, which we will be a part of in the upcoming months.
Tanisa Islam is an immigration attorney. She's executive director for South Dakota Voices for Peace. Tanisa, thank you so much. Come back again.
Thank you. Anytime.
One more statement about where we go from here.
Absolutely, sir.
Interfaith Day was exactly that. It was a matter of faith and sharing. In fact, I wanted to address the political issue before we came to Pier, and Bishop Zellmer and Betty Oldenkamp, chairman of LSS, have made it clear that this would be improper because this was only going to be a matter of expression, prayer, and caring. The next step it will need to be, and so I, of course, immediately ceased, but the next step will be to take action to insist that those that we vote for tell the truth. In fact, one state senator accused this function, Interfaith Day, as being a political movement. It sure wasn't, because I made him wanted to make it that way, but I didn't do it, and I'm glad I didn't. But the next step is going to be more serious, because we can't let this happen, because if we don't speak, who will speak for us next?
Stan Adelstein, former South Dakota state lawmaker, thank you so much for being with us today, sir.
Thank you.
Bishop David Zellmer, ELCA, South Dakota Synod, thanks for being here as well. Come back.
That was great. Thanks for
Everyone invitation. Come back. Yeah, everyone come back. We'll keep this conversation going. If you want to be part of it, join me at inthemoment@sdpb.org. That's the email, or at momentsdpb on Twitter.